This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 381, brought to you by Appleseed Comic Con and iFanboy listeners like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 381. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me this week, for once, the original team, Josh Flanagan.
Hi.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
That's
drunken surprise.
All right.
You were sleeping with a martini in one hand.
And we're Scooby-Doo at the same time. At ifanboy.com, we like comics and we read comics. And every week we read a bunch of comics and then one of us picks our nose at picks the best books and writes about it on the website, and then we talk about it on this here podcast along with various other topics of interest. Before we get to the show, quick reminder / warning, this is a review show and we will be talking about the things that happen in this week's books, so if you are worried about spoilers, just leave, go away.
We don't want you.
We don't want you.
We really don't, and that's what we've been trying to say for the last 7-8 years.
That's the message of the show. That's what we're all about. It's not wanting you. I'm not going to make any jokes this week, guys. I'm going to play this one straight.
Okay.
See how this lasts. This week, Connor had the pick.
You know, this was a week with a lot of books, but it was a week where the reading time was fast because I thought it was a wonderful week. There was at least five or six great books, I thought, books I really enjoyed. But the one that I enjoyed the most, and therefore was the pick of the week, was Batman 19 from Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, James Tinney IV, Alex Maleev, new inker Danny Mickey, and that motorcycle outside.
I thought a boom tube opened up.
So
I really thought that. That wasn't a joke.
So this was the first part of a two-part Clayface story. And what really I loved about this issue, not just the talent involved in the construction of the story, but that in a world where it's just constant comic book events or big quote important stories, this was just a two-part, or so far a two-part Batman story. Batman fighting a villain.
You're saying it was a non-event.
And it was hard to write the review and not sound dismissive in my praise, where I would say, like, this was just a little nice little story.
This is a backhanded compliment.
Which sounds like a backhanded compliment. But it actually was the greatest strength of the book in that, you know, this is where we are now in the world of superhero comics from Marvel and DC, is that it's just a constant string of important. And it gets a little tiring. I've been wanting to read Green Lantern forever, but it's been a one long 5-year streak of giant space epic stories that one leads right into the next, and I just want to read about.
Theoretically, it's part of an event. It's part of DC Comics. What the what?
They got rid of that.
Covers event. Yeah, that's true. Pull the plug on it.
But it's just a story, and I liked that aspect of it. I liked the idea. It was just, you know, there was a mystery. Batman had to solve it. He had to punch a supervillain, and there's a thing going on. There's not some grand thing happening in the background. There's not crossovers. It's just Batman fighting a villain, and it's funny that kind of thing seems refreshing. But it is, because it doesn't happen that much anymore, especially in these big books. I mean, there's stories like that in other books, but they tend to go for 6 chapters, and it just feels much bigger than it is. Mm. And I like that a lot. And besides the fact that, you know, this was a really well-done story in and of itself.
A nice, subtle, you know, approach to that this is a post-Damian Wayne story, and there's a little callback to Damian Wayne here, but it's not overplayed. It's not super maudlin as some of...
Or insane, like another one that came out this week.
Right. Right.
I would go past maudlin to Crazy Town for that one.
Yeah.
But
I want to hear about that one.
Batman and Robin. So one thing I was afraid of in the death of Damian was that we would just be lost in this morass of, you know, anger and rage and grief, which would all be justified from a character standpoint. But from my reader standpoint, I just don't want to read any of that stuff. Mm. So I liked the fact that, while it was alluded to, and as you said, it was alluded to more subtly than in other books. And
to the point that when I was reading it, I was like, oh, did he write this before? Like, that was a thing, and it just happens to have a Damian Wayne scene in here. But then it becomes clear, and but then they move on to other things. So that was very nice. And you mentioned in the review, new inker on this one.
Yep.
So it's a little bit different look.
Danny Mickey's the new inker. He took over Jonathan Glapion, and it's a much cleaner looking book than it was before. Mm-hmm. Glapion had more of a rougher ink style, and I actually quite liked it. The old style more than the new style. It looks really good. You know, it doesn't change the fact that Capullo is a great penciler, and it's, you know, the layouts are still there, the dynamic action is still there. It's just a little cleaner than it was before. Did you notice that at all, or did you?
I did.
I didn't.
I don't think I ascribed it to anything, but I actually agree with you. I like it with more lines.
Yeah.
Basically.
And on a Clayface story, that would kind of be nice. Even, I mean, he's really grungy looking.
On the other hand, though,
this way,
it actually fits, because I think the thing that I noticed about this story, I was like, this is just a straight up Batman story.
Yep.
Like, and I've never seen Scott Snyder do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of his stories are 15 issues long and, you know, just real big and heavy, and that's not what's going on here. So in a way, it's a bit of a visual indicator that a different thing is happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of how I took it.
That's true. When he's done sort of standalone issues or two-part issue things, like it's from the point of view of another character. Mm-hmm.
So with the Harper Row issue.
The Harper Row stuff. Yeah, that's, I mean, that of late, that's what he's been doing. But with this, so this is nice. And you know, he's a fan, obviously, of Batman, the animated series. And that's what this sort of feels like. And I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later with another Batman book that mm-hmm. very much harkened back to that era. So a lot of us have nostalgia for that. And I think for good reason, that there's a Paul Dini style of storytelling that is very refreshing and goes against the grain of the big, like, 15 issue and, you know, an event tie-in stories.
That was one hell of a great detective run is what that was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also mm-hmm. worth mentioning is the backup story from James Tynion IV and Alex Maleev, which is also just sort of a Batman story. It leads a little bit more into the Damian Wayne grief in that Superman comes to visit to see how Bruce is doing after the death of his son, and they, you know, he doesn't want to deal with it, and so instead they go to investigate a crime that involves the supernatural, which Superman is not good at handling. So I thought that was also fun. And as someone mentioned on the site, it was a really interesting way to handle Superman's weakness towards supernatural, which
Is it wrong that I read that the same way that when on that episode of Seinfeld where Jerry cries for the first time? He's like, what is this salty discharge? So Superman's like, something's pressing on my belly. It doesn't feel right. That's how I read Superman. I don't know if that's...
Like Seinfeld?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that works for you.
Confuse Seinfeld.
It was a story that worked in tone with Maleev's art, sort of a darker and more shadowy story. And I thought Maleev did a great job here. It was his more penciled style rather than his more photoshopped style. And I liked that. I liked them both as just Batman stories. They worked really well for me.
That first page of the backup was, I was like, Gotham Central. Look at it. I mean...
Yeah. And I also like that this is a return to Tynion's backups being like a serial more than character portraits, which I like a character portrait, but I think this is I'm more compelled to read, you know, the next chapter of this than I was with the Death of the Family stuff.
Right. So this is good. This is fun. This was a throwback in a way to when comics just told short stories sometimes, and it was refreshing. And there was lots of great books this week. Some of them were in the midst of big epic stories, but, you know, I was thinking about it as I was reading this. I don't really get these kind of Batman stories anymore, at least it's told at this level, and it was really nice to read them. So that's why it was pick of the week. Great. It was a great job by all involved. Now, a book that was very close to being pick of the week was Uncanny Avengers number 6. There's about 4 books that were close to being pick of the week, and we're going to talk about if not all of them. But this was the first issue for new artist Daniel Acuña, however you say it with the accent. I don't know.
The second way is right with a little
Acuña. This was more focusing more tightly on Thor, but reading this back to back with the Thor book, which I did, made for a delightful good 30 minutes spent with
Thor week. It's great. This was, I feel like, if you know, I want Jason Aaron to continue on with Thor for years and years and years, but if he ever gets tired of it, Rick Remender does a really good Thor. I think he has the voice down, and he does a kind of Thor that I like a lot. And this I referred to earlier as, this is like all of the ingredients in my perfect like Marvel steam pot. This has like a lot of my favorite Marvel things. So we've got Apocalypse, who, even though I'm not traditionally an X-Men guy, I've always sort of liked Apocalypse. And it's got Thor and Kang.
It's got Kang.
It's got Kang. And some really creepy looking four horsemen of a different era, and that's always kind of fun.
Quickly dispatched by Thor and his giant axe.
Yeah, and it's a young Thor. A lot of time travel, a lot of zipping back and forth, and this arc is for me. This feels like a gift for me.
It's funny. This doesn't feel at all. This is not a complaint. I just want to put that out. This does not feel at all like the previous arc.
No,
it doesn't.
Not one single bit.
Not remotely.
And I like Acuña a lot. This version of him that he's doing here feels mm-hmm. very different than I think the last stuff that I saw from him in a
It's not quite as painted.
Yeah, it's neat. I really liked it a lot. I thought the acting was stronger. It feels a little less detached, I suppose, than some of the other stuff had in the past. Than when I first got to know him on like Green Lantern and stuff like that. That mm-hmm. stuff was a little painterly. It was a little stiff. And this one, I see a lot more acting. I see a lot more storytelling going on. And because he's doing this story with sort of, you know, old-timey Thor and the Norsemen, like, you can kind of, he can kind of amp up the melodrama of it quite a bit, which is real fun.
Paul, did you have a problem with this issue? Because there was a lot more third-person narration in this one than there was in the last one, which I know you've had a problem with in the past.
It felt really natural here. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it feels shoehorned in, like it flies in from out of nowhere. But I think this all felt very organic to me. There's a nice bit of Kirby Crackle in here, so it's got that going for it. I really liked the ancestor of Logan character in here.
Oh, yeah.
The conversation between these like Roman sentries, up guarding like a gateway, and then that's when the four horsemen come in and Thor dispatches them very quickly. And after that, there's a wonderful moment that could be cringe inducing, but was written very well with the callback to Wolverine's famous catchphrase.
Yeah, it's just, I think if any book in the Marvel Universe is going to work in that bombastic 80s Claremont third person narration style, it's this one. And I think that's the fact that it embraces it gloriously,
yeah,
and tells these giant, over the top, cosmic stories with these characters works really well in its favor. It makes it one of my favorite books.
I like the idea of Apocalypse in a mead hall, and getting in a bar brawl with young Thor, and then Odin having to come in after him and like, Dad, what are you doing in here?
Yeah, it was good. And similarly, Thor God of Thunder, staying in the Thor vein, number 7, also almost pick of the week. Jason Aaron, Issad Rebic telling the next tale of Thor versus the God Butcher. And honestly, just have Thor hang out with his other selves.
Yeah.
For issues and issues, because it's fantastic.
Because this issue is now, it's young Thor has been brought in and he's helping reluctantly to build Gore's God Bomb. It's like a big, like anti-God Death Star kind of thing. And then meanwhile, present day Thor, Avenger Thor, whatever, is hanging out with a very Odin-esque old man Thor. My favorite character introduced in 2012, and this was like the first really great showcase for him. Like, we get to hang out with him more, and the two of them talking about time travel and sort of grousing about their dad, like Thor. Present-day Thor views old man Thor as being very much like Odin, and he's kind of upset that he ends up that way. And old man Thor is very dismissive of Odin and calls, the Odin force the Thor force now.
Does he take the Thor sleep?
He must.
He must.
I assume.
I don't know if he has time for it these days with all the Black Berserkers coming in and messing up.
My favorite bit in this issue was the big secret room that Thor was never allowed to go into, which he finally gets to go into, and he opens it up as a giant room full of ale and other
elderberry wine.
Other wines and beers. And
You imagine it to be like this library or something with, secret texts or whatever, a meditation room or something where Odin, got all this great knowledge, and it's just, it's it's the booze room.
he just writes a great Thor. No matter what the age is, I love the brash, impetuous, reckless young Thor. I love the classic Avengers Thor. I love the old man Thor. They're all great characters. And Issad Rebic, when he's on this book, is just wonderful.
It's just stunning. The whole thing is gorgeous to look at.
This is one of his best issues, I think.
Yeah.
There's a lot of detail to it. Sometimes they're like the art is a little sparse in some of his issues in the previous arc. Not a lot of background detail here. There's a lot of it, a lot of interesting angles.
Yeah, it's just when the two Thors are in that boat at the end and old Thor holds up the hammer to us really closely, and just all the cracks and holes in Mjolnir, and it's just, just fist pumping. It's a great book.
The Last Ride of the Gods of Thunder. I'm so excited.
It is really one of the best books.
It's all coming together. I'm very excited.
Now, a book came out this week. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's called Saga, number 12. It's an Image book, and
I don't believe I've ever heard of that.
You can occasionally get it digitally at times.
For some reason, I think that's not correct from something I heard.
Okay. I don't know. I feel like
I should be mad about it. Should I be mad about it?
I'm not sure, but if you are, I don't know at whom.
Saga number 12, I'll be honest with you guys. This is the first issue where I thought maybe I should switch to trades on it.
Really?
But this is the one I found probably the most unsatisfying in terms of just story. I liked it. And again, the worst issue of Saga is still probably a 4, 3.5, 4, but
I really like this structurally. And I like the shift that it's not centered on what's their faces, Alana and Marco and the baby and their family. It's they don't even show up until the last panel, and it's a nice little cliffhanger. This is the long awaited return of Prince Robot the Fourth, and it opens with a really harrowing scene of war.
This was his Hans, what's his name? Christoph
Gruber.
No.
That's exactly what you're talking about from Inglourious Bastards?
Yeah,
that's exactly what I thought when
exactly
I read that.
That's exactly what this is, with a little bit of backstory in the beginning. And he goes in, he sits down, and he has this conversation, and they share a drink together. And then, you know, your Anne Frank moment at the end. And I found it very satisfying. I liked it very much.
Yeah, it's the opening scene of Inglourious Bastards where you have this sort of...
Landa.
Huh?
Hans Landa.
Yeah, yeah. You have this scene of sort of bargaining between him and this character with this. They're making pleasantries towards each other. He's talking to the Cyclops alien who wrote the subversive texts promoting pacifism and it being against, you know, this war between the two races that Alana and Marco come from. And it's all it's a lot of stuff on the surface, but boiling underneath. And that's great because Prince Robot IV doesn't have a face, so it's all through, you know, the way he holds his body, the way, you know, he tilts his head and stuff like that.
She's so good at that.
She really is.
I mean, it's and I think that's why those scenes, they were written really well, and there was a lot of tension there, and it didn't, normally that's not the kind of thing that works very well in comic books, but I was rapt. I was like, what's happening here?
Because and also
we're hanging with it for such a long time that it must all mean something.
Yeah, and then also, like, the other guy in the scene has one eye, so it's, you know, it's a lot of different handicaps on expression and how these people are talking to each other, and to have a multi-layered conversation like this where it's all subtext.
To give her just one more bit of credit, that little weird seal thing in the yellow overalls.
Yeah.
The acting that she put on his face in a couple of those panels, the one where he's like, "Are you lady folk?" and he's got his eyes narrowed and just sort of anthropomorphizing an animal face. I love that kind of, that's cartoony. That's just
the other thing with, and this might be a BKV thing and not necessarily a Fiona Staples thing, is looking at that character, I'm waiting for something horrible to happen.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Agreed.
Yep. Right? Like, you see something that cute, something awful is going
to
happen.
Well, the first scene sets that expectation up. I mean, you know,
it's either something horrible is going to happen to him, or it's going to turn into something really terrible, you know, like he unhinges his jaw and...
Let me ask you, now the center of this thing that happened has to do with the images on Prince Robot's face while he's knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what that's supposed to
be. The dirty sex images.
Yeah, yeah.
I assume that's what he's thinking about while he's knocked out.
I guess that, like, that's his subconscious thought process, and that shows up on your face screen when you're
which you would think would make general life very difficult.
I would definitely think so.
He's getting some signal from some faraway planet.
Is he projecting something consciously or subconsciously?
Because in the next scene in the bed on the screen is a memory he's having while he's sleeping.
That's,
so
no,
maybe
the caller ID, secret intelligence call.
No, before that, right?
Oh, okay.
Above that is his bloody body from the memory. So maybe their dreams show up on the TV screen, which would mean that's what he's dreaming about.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. I mean, we've all had dreams.
We've already seen him have erectile dysfunction with his wife.
I can't imagine that it is without, that it won't have some sort of payoff.
There's always,
I was uncomfortable with that.
Brian K. Vaughan doesn't usually do things without meaning to do them.
I just think that's a very fascinating, like daring choice to have a really prominent character with no face. And it's a TV screen. Mm-hmm. And to do that kind of stuff too. Like, it's something that we're going to learn over time what that means and how it all works. No, but that's tough, and she makes it work, though.
So on the same line of books that may not always be available when you want them.
It's the After Dark episode of iFan.
Sex Number 2 came out, and I liked the first issue just fine, but I think that the second issue is where I figured out what this was to me, and I really enjoyed it a lot.
What is it to you?
It's this guy, and he was a superhero, and he didn't live his life at all. He's completely repressed. I mean, they tell you that he's repressed in the beginning, but he's just trying to figure out what it is about the next part of his life, all that stuff that people usually figure out in their teens and 20s. He's got no idea how to do it, and I like that. It's not that it hasn't been done, because it's the kind of thing that
well,
like,
it's Batman.
It totally is. But it's the kind of thing that Grant Morrison and Alan Moore have been talking about for decades, but it's just, you know, Joe Casey, who's sort of a acolyte / peer of those guys, to doing his take on it, and he's a really good guy to do that.
Yeah,
and then to have it done in this style that is just so reminiscent of comics from a slightly different era. This feels like an early 90s comic. It looks like it's got that Dave Gibbons thing about it too, but it's just got not, and I don't mean the early 90s in sort of the pouch sense, but like the sort of serious comics at the time, the sort of way it's produced. I don't know how I've never heard of this artist, but it's really great. Peter Kowalski. Mm-hmm. It's a very evocative art. No, I'm not even talking about sort of the sexual nature of it. It's conjuring up different eras of comics that it's making me think about, which is really interesting to me.
It's a fun world. There are interesting characters. Mm-hmm. The setup's interesting. You don't really know where it's going or what's happening yet, but you just know that there's a lot of interesting characters. So similar to Saga, actually, in that.
Yeah, well, we're getting more of the foundation of who this Simon Cook character, was, when he was a superhero and without going to flashback. I mean, we see like a sidekick or someone that he worked with, younger guy on the motorbike. We see like the sort of
Robin.
His Robin, yeah, and like sort of the Catwoman in his life.
We got a flashback. We saw the briefest glimpse of his costume, which I was surprised we got that much.
I was too,
I like it. I like it quite a bit. I wasn't even going to buy the first issue, but I did, and I'm happy I did.
I think it's really interesting because what you're seeing is that if you wanted to take it a step further, you're talking about writers. You're talking about a guy, like Casey is a guy who spent the, early part of his career writing about superheroes. And so now, like, that's the thing that he knows best. So instead, what he's doing is now writing about what comes after the superheroes, but in the context of the superheroes, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I've used that word too many times.
Also, and not to get into a religious discussion, but I come from like a Roman Catholic school background through high school and everything. And so, and then to go into, college and to not have that as a foundation, over the years, lessening on some of the things that I was really strict about. This is a very interesting book to see someone who's come into a world after being this very kind of chaste, very...
He doesn't know what to do. He has no idea what to do. It's very much
dark and scary.
And the world keeps pushing stuff on him that he's not ready for. It's not just like he's trying to embrace things. He's trying to explore a little bit, but
he's on Rumspringer.
But like this, exactly. But and like his, someone sent him like a prostitute to his house, to his condo, and he was, I am not feeling this at all. This feels very much like an invasion. And so, I'd be interested to see what his journey is and if that changes or if he stays.
He feels ready to snap, but that, could just be the way they're setting it up. But I really like it. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, guys, in about a month from now, on May 11th, don't miss out on one of the Midwest's best comic book conventions, Appleseed. It's hosted in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and Appleseed features over 100 creators. And there's a show dedicated to comics and the comic book community. You can go there and hang out with creators like Mike Norton and Paul Hornschmier. Is that correct?
Yes.
Paul Hornschmier and Laura Innes, who was not on ER. Ryan Brown and many, 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 many more, over 100 of them. It's just $10 to get in the door. You can buy your tickets in advance with guarantees, like an exclusive 11x17 print by artist Dave Wachter. Check the guest lists, read the announcements, purchase tickets. You can do it all at appleseedcon.com. That's just 1 month from now. So if you're in the Fort Wayne, Indiana driving area, go check it out. It's a great con. And go say hi to Mike Norton. He's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
Cool. I want to talk about some Monkey Brain comics. Theremin. Very good.
Was that a ghost monkey?
That was Theremin. And this one is by Kurt Pyers and Dalton Rose, who I had not been familiar with previous to this, but they're just sort of starting out. And Theremin is sort of a sci-fi take on the life of the very real person, Leon Theremin, who might not have used time travel to kill Vladimir Lenin, but in this he
probably
does.
Probably not.
Probably not.
I would just assume.
But then how do we know?
We don't know.
I'm not comfortable making a ruling.
That's the way time travel works.
Said probably. I use the qualifier. I'm not putting a stake in the ground and saying he didn't. But
this is one of those books. It would feel very much at home in Image's current slate of science as the new rock and roll books, and of those I am a huge fan. So I gravitated towards this immediately when I looked at it. And it's about the guy who created the theremin, but then it's like at the same time, he accidentally created or discovered time travel. And Lenin kind of got a peek at it and was like, this looks interesting. And apparently some bad things happened. And now Leon Theremin has to kill Lenin two or three times in the issue. And he's running away from assassins who jump out of the wall, who were camouflaged by wallpaper. And it looks a bit like, I think Lennon got a peek at some other technology from other eras and pulled it into that era. And so there's a bit of anachronism going on, and it's become sort of this great chase. And the art is beautiful. I'm hard pressed to kind of describe it, but it gets flat in a good way in certain areas, and there's a wonderful painterly quality without it being static. So this I would recommend, and I'm very interested to see where it goes from here.
Hawkeye number 9 probably would have been my pick of the week.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it an awful lot. I'm glad it wasn't my pick of the week, because I have nothing new to say about it.
Right.
Other than I thought this actually did a really good job of talking about Clint's character as he exists now better than almost anything, and in a way that actually even does fit in with the rest of the book he appears in.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, I think that the scenes with, I think it's Jessica Drew, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Spider-Woman.
When she just, you know, his secret power is, his superpower is that he'll let you down.
Right.
I was like, ugh, that's killer. You know, all it takes, and then there was like a surprise ending, which was also really well drawn. But literally, David Aja could just draw people talking to each other, and
mm-hmm.
it's okay. They're not even varied. It's mostly just shots of torso and up. And most people, you can't get away with that. But
well, he's so good with the acting. I know it's people hate when you say it, but this would make a great TV show. I know that Marvel TV is, just from knowing things, is looking for TV shows they can do on a super low budget, and This is the kind of show you could do about a superhero, because it's not really about the superhero, but it is, but it isn't.
And also, there's a villain at the end. Villain's terrifying, yeah. But you know, you could do that. That's not a monster.
The strength of this book, other than David Aja, is that the characters are so wonderful,
super strong,
and the relationships are interesting and difficult. There's no he has no simple relationships. Even his relationship with Kate is bizarre.
Yeah, there's a great structure to the book where it introduces each of these four different women, really, who are in his life, and then and what they are. And so it's the ex-wife, the work wife in Black Widow, the ex-wife being Bobby
Chase, yeah.
Right, and then the friend girl.
Isn't Bobby Chase a real person?
Bobby Morse.
Thank you.
Bobby Morse.
Bobby Chase is how many Bobbies do you know? B-O-B-B-O-I's.
Two.
Not many.
One fiction,
and then the
real.
Friend girl being Spider-Woman, and I like the idea that they flipped it. It's not the girlfriend, it's the friend girl, because if things are really confusing right now. And then Kate, who is the Kate in his life, which kind of perfectly explains it, because how do you describe that relationship?
We don't know yet.
And so it's, I love the structure.
I will say one thing.
Yeah?
I don't think that anybody knows what Black Widow is supposed to sound like.
No.
Because they certainly aren't writing her with any Russian left in her voice or speech, which isn't necessarily that they should, but to me, I feel like it's supposed to be there. But
it should.
Like that.
Yeah. Even the cartoon in the first couple episodes had her speaking in a Russian accent and just went away.
Yeah.
Can't be a root for no Russians. Now, Paul, will it surprise you to know that The Rocketeer Hollywood Horror number 3 was the second runner-up for Pick of the Week, or the first runner-up, the second choice for Pick of the Week?
It would not surprise me, no.
All right, Josh, are you still on this, or is it just me and Paul?
Yeah.
This had two great things about it. One, the reveal of the narrator, that the narrator was Groucho Marx. Two, much more of Nick and Nora Charles. And this story hits right in my old Hollywood-loving wheelhouse, which I know I supposed to have stopped saying years ago, but I'm bringing it back.
I heard it coming. It hits right in. I was like, there he goes. He put a couple words in. Oh!
It's where I live. And I just love everything about this. I love the fact that they're running around old Hollywood. There's a lot of guest stars from old actors. Nick and Nora Charles, the classic detective duo, are playing a major role in it. They're great characters. And then the reveal of Groucho in the middle was just wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, that's Gregory Peck?
At the party?
Yeah, at the bar. Or is that Groucho? That's Groucho with no,
the bar, the narrator's Groucho.
Okay, I'm sorry. I got it. Sorry. You're right. Yeah. That makes more sense.
All right. There is a thing where I'm reading the book and I do get a sense of, why are they allowed to write a book that's just for me and Connor? Like, do other people enjoy this?
I did get that. I asked myself that question.
And so sometimes, even though
we would not be able to fund this book, just the two of us.
Right. You're going to find that out real soon.
And then even though I enjoy it and I like that a lot and I think other people should like it too, I do, I just feel guilty.
This should not be.
You should not exist, book. Page turn, page turn.
But also, and just, you know, cameos aside, I liked the story. I liked the fact that the Rocketeer had to use this sort of hashed together prototype rocket pack when he loses his original one and he can't really fly it. It's really heavy. And, you know, there's a lot of obstacles for him to overcome, but it still
and
shows his heroism.
He gets a drink.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's talk about heroism. He's like, I should drink.
He takes the bus too because it's just too damn heavy. But this book is funny more than anything. I love this book. I had a whole way to write this as the pick in my head, but I picked Batman. Speaking of Batman, Batman Little Gotham is the collection of the digital first stories from Dustin Nguyen and Derek Friedholz, which is the sort of cutesy Batman. The art is wonderful. It's the watercolor style.
This might be the best that Gwyn's ever looked, I think. I've liked his work before. But.
If you look at Gwyn's DeviantArt page, he's sort of does these for fun a lot, and they're great. So, you know, he's like sort of had those, I think, 3Z form, just like Scotty Young's baby covers.
A couple of times done them in the Superman Batman book a couple of years ago, but this is, they're not quite babies. They're just, everybody's just kind of short and squat.
There's a term.
Chibi, I believe.
I don't want
to say it. Thank you.
Right.
But it's very funny, very cute. There's two stories in here. One of them is about Halloween. One is about Thanksgiving. And the Halloween story, Bruce has to teach Damien about Halloween, and he tells him it's about getting candy. So Damien busts open a gumball machine and steals the candy, and he has to learn it's not about that. He's got to go around trick-or-treating. It's fun, and then he rounds up all the supervillains and gets
them. And then for Thanksgiving, there's a Thanksgiving Day parade, and you find out that Bruce Wayne has funded a Batman balloon. And Thanksgiving, there's sort of an avian theme with the turkey, so, you know, it's a penguin story. Yeah. So these are so much fun. And I read these digitally, and so they're chopped in, like, square pages. And they should print it that way, like, in, like, sort of, like, a children's, like a picture book kind of style.
There's like, horizontal.
The watercolor is just so beautiful, and these books are so colorful, and I think they're, just by putting them in these single issues, I hope that they do something special with the way that they print them in a collection.
For you Stephanie Brown fans, she's on the cover. It's probably the only time you're going to see her as Batgirl.
Well, they recolor in the Halloween,
story, there's somebody dressed up as her, but they colored her hair.
Originally, it was a blonde Batgirl. Even though it's a kid dressing up as Batgirl, they were still afraid to have someone that even looked like Stephanie Brown, so they painted.
But yeah, she's right there on the cover, right there.
So paranoid.
Yeah, but there you go. It's really fun. This is a great book for all ages.
They do Lunar New Year's, too. They do all the holidays. It's great.
That's fun.
Sledgehammer 44, number 2. All too soon, this is over. This is a two-parter. Is this
just over?
Yeah,
but over in a different sense as well. I felt it went really quick. We had an idea, and then I was like, "Oh, there's Broom. It's Hellboy." I thought we were gonna get just another thing, which I was fine with for a little bit.
Well, I thought it was a Hellboy story.
We didn't know that. It didn't say so.
Well, because it's Mignola. Like it's
Baltimore isn't necessarily, and it looks and feels just like that. I thought he's gonna.
That's true. Yeah.
Isn't Baltimore in the same world as Hellboy?
No.
I don't think so. So this is in the first issue, I mean, it's all about Jason Latour drawing really, really cool, you know, World War II stuff and great tanks and action and super dynamic. But then there was also this great mystery at the core of it, that there's this big sort of like Atomic Robo kind of dude, to be honest. It's the Atomic Robo idea. Mm-hmm. But is he a robot or is he a guy in a suit? Is it mystical? What's going on? We find out what it is in this issue, but I like that even though we get some answers, there's still a lot of mystery about it. And it ends on a really kind of downbeat, somber kind of note in that there's a guy, okay, to spoil it, there's one of the guys who was in this platoon, in this group that dies, and he has to make the choice whether he's going to, I guess, go to the afterworld or whatever, afterlife, or become the new spirit inside the Sledgehammer 44 suit powered by Vril technology, which is like, you know, the spark of life. And they talk about Hyperborea and monks and stuff and like the original angels that lived and populated the earth. And he decides in order to save his friends, he's going to doom himself to being the new spirit running this big robot suit. And instead of being really triumphant, you don't even see the final battle. You see the aftermath of it, which I liked a lot. and you get this downbeat note where he says, you know, I'm this guy, but no, I'm not. I'm nobody anymore. I don't have that name of the person that he once was. So I hope we see more of this. I like this a lot.
Yeah, no, I liked it. I liked how sort of sparse it was. And like, I kind of was waiting for the part of this issue where he keeps charging out and destroys all the Nazis, but that really wasn't what it was about, and that was fine.
Well, you see the potential future that what if the Nazis did take hold of this technology and they show you the world being destroyed at the hands of, you know, Nazi-produced Sledgehammer 44 suits. But he makes the decision to become this thing so that doesn't happen. And then you don't need to see the big fight because that was in the first issue.
Sure, yeah.
Really.
Although, you know, they want to draw.
Yeah, I mean, of course it would be fun to
also,
see.
Also, it's the Sledgehammer 14-5s and... I believe is how the Native German goes.
those are the books that came out this week that we wanted to talk about.
That wasn't the joke.
It was German. A great week of books. We really enjoyed it. So you can go to ifanboy.com/comics every week. Make your pull list, see what's coming out. After you read them, you can rate and review them. You can also make your own picks of the week choices. We like to run down the top five picks of the week as chosen by the audience. This week, number five, Batman and Robin 19, the aforementioned crazy issue. I get an 8.1% in which Batman tries to resurrect Robin like Frankenstein.
With Frankenstein there in the room.
With Frankenstein, yes. Number four, Batman 19, 9.0%. Of course, these numbers are all the time of recording. And since we're recording a little bit earlier than usual, these might change drastically by the time you see them. Number three, Hawkeye number 9, 11.2%. Number two, Thor God of Thunder 7, with 13.4%. And number one, Saga 12, with 49.9% of the votes. Good week of books. Good week of books. In addition to making your pull list and making your picks of the week, you can also write some user reviews. We like to read a couple of those in the show.
First one is up from Casey Justice of Star Wars number 4. Give the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage at this time is 1/10 of a percentage point. And he says, the art and the action don't miss, nor the character work on Luke Siss. But the book's pace is slowing and I know where it's going. I've got a bad feeling about this.
Nipsey Russell.
Eisner. That's what you get.
It's a good one.
Yep.
I agree with this.
That's why I didn't just say Eisner because he came on and did something clever. It was because when I finished, I go, boy, he's exactly right. Yeah. So what the limerick said.
Shall we move on to our next review?
I don't think we have to add anything to the limerick.
Jose Rivera, 83, said of Superboy number 19, story 4 out of 5, art 4 out of 5. Pow, nope. Answers to the question of where the new 52 Superboy came from finally get answered with this issue. While not the answer I was expecting, it was certainly a surprise. Nonetheless, it harkens back to the early issues of this book and sets up one hell of an enemy for Superboy to face in the coming months. The book is finally getting back on track, and I personally can't wait to see where this is going. Do any of us know what he's talking about? I know on the cover it suggested that it was Lois and Clark are the parents of Superboy. I don't know if that's true because I'm not reading this.
Well, there you go. You can go to ifanboy.com/comics and you can write your own user review and get it on the show by making it good. And
that was a fantastic segment.
We added nothing.
We don't even have to. Sometimes we let the people speak. It's okay to let the people speak, Josh.
I learned about that. Yeah, it's a good grunt.
We're going to let the people speak again after you tell them about Amazon.
Yo, go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. And when you buy things like that, then it will help us.
Like what?
Anything, dude. What I'm saying is if you click through to Amazon from our website, one of them banner ads on the side or whatever, click through that way, anything you buy doesn't cost you anything different. You still get, here we go, you still get the same great prices and service that you've come accustomed to over the years from such a reliable servicer as Amazon. But right. we also get a piece of that. It's exactly like the mafia.
We wet our beaks
a little. We just need a little taste. So if you're buying all your stuff from Amazon, like we know you are, or at least one or two of you are buying an awful lot of stuff.
Buy one of every George Foreman grill.
Are there more? Is that still a thing?
Yeah. One of each kind, and I will send you a copy of American Virgin Volume 1 Head.
We don't even...
We'll all sign it.
I think I gave that away at some point. Or I tried to. That's more likely. So ifanboy.com/Amazon, or just, you know, look around the site. You'll see the Amazon thing, banners pop up. You click on one of those. You bookmark that as your Amazon bookmark, and it's all good. You don't have to think about it.
Sorry, I was thinking about the Foreman grills, and I got hungry. And
you can't get a char on those things.
No, you can't. It's not necessarily a good way to cook meat.
No.
But I still thought about the idea.
Do you want people to buy them or not?
I do. It's a great product, and you should use it.
On
to the audience segment, the audience question segment, and Brad has a related question. Brad says, you guys usually talk about how Connor buys everything he can from Amazon. When he does this, does he buy stuff through the iFanboy link? If he does, is Connor the biggest supporter of iFanboy in regards to money?
Yes. He's the biggest. I don't know what I can say.
I do. Of course I use the iFanboy.
Yeah, no, we all do.
We all use the iFanboy link. This isn't just for you guys. We all contribute equally.
It's like a discount I never see.
That being said, I hope I am not the biggest supporter. In fact, I know I'm not. So
no.
There you go. My UPS guy might think I am, if you asked him. But
that's my favorite thing that ever happened. It's the UPS guy one day just going, what is it you do? And I told him. I was like, I work on a comic book website. And he didn't say anything. He just looked so disappointed in that answer. Like my mother.
he just knew you wouldn't be friends.
Yeah. No, he did. He did.
You would never talk again about the Patriots.
Nope.
Next David email. W. writes,
at least you talked to your guy about the Yankees.
Oh, in New York, day. Yes. Yeah. Now it's a whole other issue.
Yeah. LAUPS, not so great.
David W. writes, if there was a Justice League Canada, who would be on the team? I'm thinking Green Arrow would head things up and Crimson Fox would be on it. But after that, there isn't any easy choices as DC really doesn't have Canadian heroes. Why does DC hate Canada so?
He's not wrong.
I have no answers.
I looked this up and on the DC Wikipedia, they have a Canadian heroes page and it is
sparse.
A little sparse. First of all, Green Arrow is not Canadian. I don't know why he'd be leaving the team.
Was one of them?
Stewart is. Jeff Lemire writes Green Arrow. So.
Michael John Carter, was he Mr. Terrific? He is Canadian. But that's about it. After that, you're not going to get, I'm looking it up.
The original Mr. Terrific?
I'm sorry, Michael John Carter is Booster Gold. Apparently he's Canadian.
They still have Canada then?
We haven't annexed it by then. Annexed it for its sweet, sweet maple syrup.
Tar Sands.
And it's Tar Sands. Otherwise, you got Flying Fox. You've got Freight Train. You've got Frostbite. You got Lumberjack, who has an awesome beard. You've got some guy named Trigger with a giant cowboy hat. Basically, you've got the worst superhero team ever.
It's funny because then by comparison, Marvel seems very pro-Canada.
They've got Alpha Flight and Wolverine.
Tons of characters you can start naming who are Canadian. Bill Shatner. Not a Marvel character per se, but you get where I'm going with it.
He's a character. Trigger is actually an Amalgam Universe character. I don't even know who he is a mix of, but you're right. Strangely, DC doesn't have any real other. Booster Gold can't really be Canadian, can he?
Look, you getting all proprietary.
It's not what? Canada as we know it.
I'm not proprietary. I just never heard that about his character before.
Well, they have a lot of Canadian.
Wait a minute. This says he was born in Gotham City. Who's running
this? Which is part of Canada.
Yeah, you didn't know that? Batman is Canadian. I am the terror in the night, eh?
How could he be Canadian and born in Gotham City? That doesn't make any sense, DC Wikipedia. Jerks.
The film Strange Brew.
Take off.
Strange Brew is a fantastic film.
Take off, you hoser, Joker. That was the whole first 10 years of that book.
This belt's just full of beer.
Molson.
Got Molson in his belt.
Yeah. Yeah. Originally, the Justice Society was a hockey book.
Wow. This is all sad news for Canadian fans of DC Comics.
So DC hates Canada. Let's do the next letter.
Sad day for DC fans from Canada.
I'll do it.
All right, go ahead.
Tiago from Porto, Portugal. I don't even want to know if there are any Portuguese heroes. Oh. Probably not. I almost said Portugalian. I was like, that's definitely not right.
No.
down old South America way. I have a question concerning the chronology of the Marvel Universe. Captain America's Man Out of Time miniseries shows the return of Captain after being defrosted by the Avengers as something that happened in the aughts, when in fact it took place in the 60s. Is this some kind of revisionist editorial guide? I would like to point out that I was perfectly comfortable with the fact that the Secret Invasion Kree-Skrull War was mentioned as something that happened 7 years ago. Following this line of reasoning, and after a few more decades of continuity, it's a fact the timeline will be so compressed that World War II will take place in 1 week. But for the sake of logic, at least, it'll still make sense. I know that Man Out of Time approach is being taken into other storylines from like Punisher and Iron Man. Who knows if they lived through Nam or the Iraq War? Is there some way of making sense of all this? Hold on, I got this one, guys. No. Stop trying to do that.
Yeah, it'll never make sense. And there is a sliding timeline in comics in that these events are constantly sliding forward. So obviously Captain America didn't come back in the 60s. That would make him very, very old. And I think that they've redone Iron Man and Punisher to have happen in the Iraq War as opposed to Nam, because obviously that would make them very, very, very old. So they're constantly moving the timeline forward. They have to.
And it's not going to make sense, and you have to be cool with the elasticity of that.
I don't blame you for trying, because I tried to do it recently with all new X-Men, bringing the X-Men from the past. But is it from the 60s? Is it from the 80s? What's going on with the fashions?
It's funny, and because if you think about it, originally, Captain America was only frozen in ice for like 15 years or 20 years. So it's not as jarring as being frozen in the 40s and waking up in the 21st century.
Listen, movies. When you get frozen in ice and you spend a weekend frozen in ice and then you come back and tell us it's not jarring.
I did. I went to college in Ithaca.
His inbox must be a mess.
Yeah, so it's tough. You can't, on the one hand, you can't make sense of it. On the other hand, the sense is that the timeline constantly gets pushed forward because it has to.
And it's all fictional anyway, so that's totally fine.
Yeah, so there you go. It is tough. That's the only way to make sense of it, Tiago.
Wouldn't
so thank you
expend,
for
if you're S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever, wouldn't you expend a little bit more money looking for Captain America? You know, like when he goes down in the plane, wouldn't you go after him a little bit?
It's a big ocean.
It is.
It's a big ocean. You know? They found the cube. Are we talking about the movies? I'm confused.
Doesn't matter.
Thank you for writing in. You can write in at contact@ifanboy.com. You can also call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. When you do that, tell us your name and where you're from and keep your message to around 30 seconds so we can put it in the show without much hassle. Well,
there you go.
In the meantime, we have other shows.
Yeah, there's a Make Comics podcast. It was supposed to be out last week, but it wasn't, so I got one for this week. It's about covers. It's me and Andy Schmidt from Comics Experience. We're talking about it. It's a good show.
It's about Canadian covers?
No, just regular covers. It applies to all nationalities equally.
What are different about Canadian covers that make them not regular?
They're federally funded.
Oh. Nice.
The guy working on it doesn't have to worry if he gets sick.
The sound I hear right now is all the Canadian listeners leaving.
Why? I thought I was speaking very highly of them.
They have to check their fur traps.
Just until they do.
They're leaving anyway. Half of them want to secede. We didn't expect that to be with you.
We also do a Booksplode show. We're going to do another one. I guess it'll be out next week, and it's about the sequel to The Dark Knight Returns.
Did you record that yet?
You're gonna.
Who's going to be on it? Tell the people.
Josh and Jeff and me.
Cool.
Jeff Johns?
It's going to be awkward when you talk about it. Jeff Lemire.
It's going to be awkward if I don't read
Jeff
it.
Jeff Lemire, it'll be an all-Canadian show.
Oh, God, that's going to be weird.
We were going to maybe do a G.I. Joe show. Clearly, we didn't. I didn't even see it, honestly. I was going
to
see it. And
I didn't see any reason to go see it.
I was going to. I literally got in the car, and I drove about 5 miles, sat on the 405 for 30 minutes, realized I was never going to make the showing. Got off of the next exit, went home, and had a drink.
They have movie theaters on the west side, you know.
What happened was, I went to see The Breakfast Club at that particular theater, and this projector screwed... No, there was a fire alarm. The projector screwed up on The Hobbit. There was a fire alarm, and so I got a free pass at that theater in the will call box. So I had to go to that theater to get the free pass.
What happened was, my friend was a fisherman, but he caught too much fish. I like the idea that you were driving to the movie theater and you just went, no. And you stopped and turned around. I did that yesterday about a cupcake.
I got off the Venice exit. And
then you stopped the car. You got out of the car and walked home.
It was gonna be free, which is why I was driving to Sherman fucking Oaks from where I live by the beach, which for all you LA fans know is not fun.
That's like driving to Canada for me.
Exactly.
Literally.
So. I was on the way to see it, didn't get a chance to. And then once I realized we weren't going to do a show on it, I didn't make a point of seeing it. Though I do want to see it. It looks pretty good in terms of what it is. Anyway.
I'm going to earmark that we're not submitting this episode of the podcast to the Potty Awards or whatever. No.
Well, but
why not?
The Canadians, they control the Potty Awards.
Gosh.
And we never get a fair shake.
You know about the 9 Canadian bankers, right?
Oh.
Just trying to think if I know any Canadians that I need to call after this. I don't know.
I know several.
Don't listen to that show.
They're masked on the
weird.
Border.
Josh,
weird.
You have the next part of the script.
I don't want to go to it yet. I'm having too much fun. Go to ifanboy.com or ifanboy.ca. I don't know if that works.
I have no idea.
It doesn't. We definitely don't have that. For the pick of the week review that Connor wrote and more comic book stuff that goes up there, I even found time to put an opinion piece this week.
You jerk.
How do you like that, Quebec?
Eh?
All sorts of other stuff that's going on there. We did a long reportage piece about the tar sands and the effect on the economy in Edmonton.
I did not like your piece.
That just sounds like a bad Frenchman.
Well, that's French Canadians.
No, they have a different accent.
Quebec.
No, they have a Quebecois accent.
Well, the person I was doing emigrated from France to Quebec because there was jobs.
Whatever. Does he have a fur hat on?
Of course, he's a Canadian.
Good to go.
He got it from his
More
track.
Discussion topics and news. ifanboy.com/about to see the staff of iFanboy and their social network links. Follow us on twitter.com/ifanboy and stay in touch on facebook.com/ifanboy. See, the thing is, last week I used a song on the show from a Canadian band and a bunch of Canadian people were like, hey, it's great to hear that on there. And
oh,
they've
no.
just blown it right out of the water this week.
It's our bait and switch. That's how we do it.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, which I believe has a U in it for Canadian fans. Contact?
What's happening?
You can call our voicemail line.
Star Trek versus Contact. That doesn't make any sense.
No, at least not. 888-FANBOYS-326-2697. Any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, eh?
The Lamborghini Contact.
If you dig this, write us a review in iTunes or iTunes Canada, I guess, or better yet, tell your friends about it. Introduce your mom to podcasts.
When you're hanging around the fur trap or the fishing hole that you've cut into the lake, or slapping around a hockey puck,
go up on the rough and spread
out,
the iFanboy word
for the sweet, sweet syrup.
If you the way that you download a podcast in off iTunes in Canada is you hit the link and then in 8 weeks you get a cassette.
Oh, God. You know, this is a throwback to our first year of the show, and we used to make fun of Canadians in the Frapper Map segment.
Did we?
Yes. Do you remember that? And they didn't take too kindly to that.
They still use Frapper Maps in Canada. They just got it 2 years ago.
They were listening to those shows going, what the hell are they talking about?
We haven't completely spiraled out of control in a long time. And
what are you talking about, G.I. Joe? It's great.
I for one apologize to no one. So this week's show, and possibly for the show in general, depending on what those 9 Canadian bankers tell us.
They're super powerful.
Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
Au revoir, mes amis.
Wow.